Thank you very much for the introduction. So I'm from North Dakota State University, and my talk today will encompass the biogeochemistry of wetland soil at depth within the Prairie Pothole region. So the presentation today will discuss a little bit about background, my hypotheses, methods, a little bit of data, and a little bit of an overview. So we're just kind of going a little bit about background, refresher course of wetlands. Wetlands are very different from a dry land soil. They are loosely saturated for a period of time during the season. They contain different types of vegetation and different types of soil versus a dry land soil. They have very different chemistry compared to a dry land soil, especially in the soil itself. They act as sediment catchments. They are natural pollutant filters, as my previous predecessor, colleague just mentioned about the nitrogen collection. But we really don't know what's actually going on at depth with the biogeochemistry. There has been studies that I looked at a few elements at once, like cobalt or arsenic or uranium, but haven't looked at a bunch of elements all at the same time at depth within a wetland, and also haven't really incorporated how the landscape is actually impacting that biogeochemistry at depth. So we got a basic picture here of just one of my normal wetlands that I sampled. And you can kind of see there is a difference here. We got the middle of that wetland, and then you also got that change of the vegetation on the edge there. And then you also you move up on that landscape, and as you can kind of see back here, there is corn. So also, how are the anthropogenic influences really impacting that chemistry itself? So my research is actually in the Prairie Pothole region, which is a little north from Louisiana. And the Prairie Pothole region encompasses a large area. It goes from basically includes Iowa, South Dakota, North Dakota, Minnesota, Montana, and all the way up into Canada. But we are actually just going to be looking in North Dakota. We are looking at wetlands that are on the Missouri Plateau. The parent material there is calcareous till, and it's a landscape depression type of thing. So there are different types of wetlands itself. They are categorized either by hydrology or the vegetation. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to classify wetlands itself. There was a classification developed at North Dakota State University called the Index of Plant Community Integrity, basically the IPCI. And what this is a ranking system for different types of wetland, and it's based on vegetation. As you can see here, we have a very good wetland right here and a very poor wetland. So people in the range science would go out and classify the types of vegetation. So an example of a very good wetland would be classified, would have native sedges, rushes, would contain native flowers, just native grasses. And also the very poor site, we would see, as you can see here, kind of in the background right here, there's Canadian thistles, there's cattails, so very poor vegetation. So there are two types of extremes of wetlands. We have really good quality wetlands and very poor wetlands. So with this in mind, we have these two types of wetlands. Well, we want to see if there actually is a difference in the chemistry itself. So my hypothesis was that really good wetlands will show a very vertical change in chemistry and with the different elements at depth, while those very poor wetlands will show a very distinct concentration of certain elements. So my sites are in the middle of North Dakota, again, on the Missouri Plateau. I sampled 12 different wetlands. There were 6 very good wetlands and 6 very poor wetlands. These samples were collected by using a Giddings probe. We selected samples at a meter depth. And how we sampled them is because we also want to include the landscape impact on these wetlands, is that we sampled in the middle of the wetland itself, across that wetland, and then we moved up that landscape. We divided the wetland itself into two different sampling sections because we noticed there's a huge change in just vegetation itself. As we know, vegetation does play a major role in things, especially with the chemistry. And then we moved up that landscape itself with the foot slope and the back slope sampling. But today, with limited time, I'm only going to be talking about the center of the wetland itself. So we collected the samples, we broke them down, we dried them, we ground them, and now we analyze them by inductively coupled plasma mass spectrometry. And so we looked at 60 elements at once at depth. What this encompasses is all these elements that are not grayed out. Those are the elements that we looked at in each of those soil samples. We then, for this sample, okay, and then, because I can't talk about each of those elements today, I'm only going to be talking about zinc and phosphorus, because those are kind of some hot topics in our area of research. And I'm going to compare those concentrations to organic matter, which is measured by loss of ignition, and then, of course, pH, which is done on a one-to-one basis. So we got those two types of wetlands again, because they're classified by the different types of vegetation. So we have the very poor wetlands on top, see here, and the very good wetlands on the bottom. Okay, you get the two different types of wetlands. And then we have the sampling at depth here. So we have that O layer, and then the 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 45, and to a depth of a meter. Okay, so we just went down that profile itself. And then we have on the x-axis organic matter percent, and then we have total phosphorus and micromoles per gram. And the reason why it's in total phosphorus is we're looking at everything that is in this system. So I just kind of want to highlight something that's going on here. You see these kind of blue squares that are going on here? That's that O layer, and that O layer, the organic matter layer, seems to be kind of compressing the mineral soil. So I just want to highlight that on the next slide, we're going to pull that O layer out so we kind of see some trends that are happening within this data itself. And also, we are in the middle of data analysis, so we just kind of want to show some trends of actually some interesting things that we're seeing. But as you can see, though, there is O layers that are occurring in those very poor wetlands. And you ask why? Well, yes, they have poor vegetation, but they still have the right environment to develop that O layer itself. So on the next slide, all we did is we got the same x and y axes, and we got the same depth, except I pulled out that O layer because it was just kind of compressing that data. So now you can kind of see if there is a difference between these two types of wetlands, just kind of visually looking at. And as you can see, there seems to be kind of a clustering that's happening in those very poor wetlands itself, while those very good wetlands seem to be nicely a uniform, more of a distribution is kind of what we see. We kind of see here the organic matter has a higher level, especially at that top soil, I got the 0 to 10. And then you can kind of see as you move down here, you're actually moving at depth within that soil profile itself, because you got the green triangles here, 10 to 20. So we've seen a nice uniform trend that's happening with when it's compared from total phosphorus to the organic matter itself. While here, those very poor wetlands seem to be kind of clustering together. And we're thinking because of how that landscape is used surrounding those wetlands. Some of those very poor wetlands were either tilled or were having lots of cattail or just had been worked up and severely disturbed. So now we're going to look at, again, we got the same depth itself and we got the very poor wetlands again on top, very good wetlands on bottom. And now we're looking at the total zinc itself compared to the organic matter. Again, that O layer is really compressing that data that we can see there. But you can kind of see, again, you have those very poor wetlands still have that O layer itself. So the next slide, we're just going to pull that O layer out so we can kind of see what's really going on within the system so we can look at that mineral soil. Okay. So I apologize, there is a mix-up here. The very good is on the top here. So you got the very good wetlands on top, very poor wetlands on bottom. So then you got the x-axis of the organic matter versus the total zinc on the y-axis. And you can kind of just visually see that the very good wetlands have a nice uniform distribution of that zinc and organic matter as it goes down that profile. So you got the topsoil here, the 10 to 20 here, and then of course a meter depth. So it's a very nice uniform distribution down that soil core. While here, the very poor wetlands just be kind of clustered together. You do see that topsoil does have, you know, a little bit higher organic matter, but still it's not as high organic matter as those very good wetlands. And also you can see those very good wetlands just have a higher organic matter percent, so just not as disturbed. So now, we are going to look at the pH. You got the very poor wetlands on top, very good wetlands on bottom, you got pH itself on the x-axis, and you got total phosphorus again on the y-axis. What you can see here is that the very poor wetlands seem to be having a clustering effect grouping around the pH of 7 to 8, while those very good wetlands have a nice, more uniform distribution of that pH. Okay. So what I think is going on is those very poor wetlands. We're thinking, again, that precarious, the parent material is really impacting what is happening in those very poor wetlands. It's really impacting the pH itself. Because here we got more of an acidic conditions, which we would see typically in the topsoil itself. And then we have, again, that parent material, which is showing down here, which is normally around a 7 to 8. So there is a little bit of visual differences between these two types of wetlands. So now we're going to look at total zinc. We looked at phosphorus, now we're looking at the total zinc. Again, you got the same depths occurring here, and then you have pH on the x-axis, zinc on the y-axis, and you have the two types of wetlands. Again, there's another clustering effect that's occurring with that total zinc in the very poor wetlands. You got that pH again around 7 to 8, but generally seems to be a trend that's occurring, the clustering of that data. While again, those very good wetlands have a nice uniform distribution here. You got that topsoil that's occurring here, and you kind of go out of depth. So we're kind of seeing there is some differences even with the two different types of wetlands itself. So I just kind of want to do an overview of what we're kind of seeing with the rest of the data. We are seeing that the O layer is really impacting the data itself, and that there is visually a difference between those very poor and very good wetlands. There seems to be a clustering impact that's occurring within that data itself. And we're really thinking that the upland erosion from either tillage or wind erosion is really impacting the data, especially from the human influence. And of course, I would like to thank my advisors and my team members and the funding that was occurred. And then the really nice thing with this project is we had a lot of undergraduates involved with this. So it's nice to kind of see, because a lot of students aren't really aware of soil, so they're kind of had a different perspective after helping with this project. So it's a neat opportunity. Any questions?
We have time for a couple of questions for Karen. Questions? Bruce?
There is hydrology data, yep. So the sites that were selected have been selected for other things. We've looked at the vegetation. There is hydrology data. I do not have it on the top of my head. That is part of it, too. Yes, it is. They drink greatly.
Doug?
They are all recharged wetlands. Okay. So that's the nice thing we select wetlands is that you have different sizes of wetlands, but we made sure that they're all a recharge type of wetland system. Just to try to eliminate one problem that's occurring within the chemistry data itself.
Talk for one more question if there's one out there somewhere.
Why are they very poor? They are very poor because of the vegetation that they've been classified in. So this study these wetlands have been studied by other people, and so we want to just kind of add on to the understanding another part of the story we want to explain, and it's been these are classified by vegetation. We haven't looked at the chemistry at depth within these soils, but they've been classified by the vegetation. So that's why they're classified by those very poor, which has those cattails and Canadian thistles, while those very good has native grasses, which is basically inherent when we think of undisturbed sites.
Why are they poor?
Why are they poor? Because they've been disturbed. Either we have sometimes farmers have gone through with tillage if it's been dry, or some have been associated close to roads, so there have been runoff that's been occurring into it. That's why.
Thank you.